If you'll turn with me in your Bible to Genesis chapter 39, we'll read from beginning with verse 20 and go through chapter 40. It's a narrative passage. Again, we're studying the life of Joseph, and our message this morning is entitled, I Hate to Wait. And this is a lesson that we learn in this aspect of Joseph's life. You remember Joseph was thrown in prison by his master. He had been sold into slavery, gone down into Egypt, was in the house of one of Pharaoh's chief men, and then was thrown in prison because his wife had tried to seduce Joseph. Joseph wouldn't fall into it, and she felt rejected and told a lie on Joseph, and Joseph was thrown into prison. Verse 19, when his master heard the story his wife told him, saying, this is how your slave treated me, he burned with anger. Joseph's master took him and put him in prison, the place where the king's prisoners were confined. That does not mean this was kind of a country club situation. But while Joseph was there in prison, the Lord was with him. And he showed him kindness and granted him favor in the eyes of the prison warden. So the warden put Joseph in charge of all those held in prison, and he was made responsible for all that was done there in the prison. The warden paid no attention to anything under Joseph's care because the Lord was with Joseph and gave him success in whatever he did. Sometime later, the cupbearer and the baker of the king of Egypt offended their master. We don't know what they did. They offended their master, the king of Egypt, and Pharaoh was angry with the two officials, the chief cupbearer and the chief baker, and put them in custody in the house of the captain of the guard in the same prison where Joseph was confined. The captain of the guard assigned them to Joseph, and he attended them. After they had been in custody for some time, each of the two men, the cupbearer and the baker of the king of Egypt, who were being held in prison, had a dream the same night, and each dream had a meaning of its own. When Joseph came to them the next morning, he saw that they were dejected. So he asked the Pharaoh's officials, who were in custody with him in the master's house, "Why are your faces so sad today?" "We both had dreams," they answered, "but there's no one to interpret them." Then Joseph said to them, "Do not interpretations belong to God? Tell me your dreams." So the chief cupbearer told Joseph his dream. He said, "In my dream I saw a vine in front of me, and on the vine there were three branches. As soon as it budded, it blossomed, and its clusters ripened into grapes. Pharaoh's cup was in my hand, and I took the grapes and squeezed them into Pharaoh's cup and put the cup in his hand." "This is what it means," Joseph said to him. "The three branches are 3 days. Within 3 days, Pharaoh will lift up your head and restore you to your position, and you will put Pharaoh's cup in his hand just as you used to do when you were his cupbearer. But when all goes well, remember me and show me kindness, mention me to Pharaoh, and get me out of this prison. For I was forcibly cut off from the land of the Hebrews, and even here I have done nothing to deserve being put in a dungeon." When the chief baker saw that Joseph had given a favorable interpretation, he said to Joseph, "I too had a dream. On my head were 3 baskets of bread. In the top basket were all kinds of baked goods for Pharaoh, but the birds were eating them out of the basket on my head." "This is what it means," Joseph said. "The 3 baskets are 3 days. Within 3 days, the Pharaoh will lift off your head and hang you on a tree, and the birds will eat away your flesh." Now the 3rd day was Pharaoh's birthday, and he gave a feast for all of his officials. He lifted up the heads of the cupbearer, chief cupbearer, and the chief baker in the presence of the officials. He restored the chief cupbearer to his position so that once again he put the cup into Pharaoh's hand. But he hanged the chief baker just as Joseph had said to them in his interpretation. The chief cupbearer, however, did not remember Joseph, he forgot him. I have a friend who will not go to any function, any restaurant, where he must stand in line. He was in the military, and he said, all I did was stand in line. I got my fill of it, and if I can help it, I will never stand in another line again. And he's just boneheaded enough that he doesn't. At least, not if he can help it. For most of us, waiting is boring, it's wearisome, and it's a waste of time. It's frustrating because we're kept doing nothing when we would like to be doing some very important things, or at least to our minds. It's important to realize, though, that all waiting is not the same. Waiting has a different meaning depending upon the situation. For instance, if after worship on Sunday, we go home and I sit in front of the TV and I'm watching a football game, and I have the newspaper there, and while the commercials are on, I read the newspaper. Not to waste any time, of course. And maybe we have some friends, and we are talking and having fun, and my wife comes in and says, you're going to have to wait a few minutes. Dinner's not quite ready. It'll be out of the oven in a few minutes. That's one kind of waiting. There's a different kind of waiting if I have climbed up on the side of the house on a ladder, and I have paintbrush in one hand and bucket in the other, and I'm right at the peak, and suddenly I realize that one of the legs of the ladder is on a soft spot and it's starting to give a little bit, and I say, Linda, come grab the ladder, help me. And she says, you'll have to wait a few minutes. I need to go and take the dinner out of the oven. One of those waitings is incidental and inconsequential, and the other one is very crucial. Every moment counts. Every second counts. When we look at what God is doing in Joseph's life in this situation, we start to realize that there aren't any incidental times in our life. All times are strategic. That which we might think is incidental, and we might think is a waste of time, is in fact quite crucial. Now, as I read this passage, I think there are three major lessons that come to me. One is that waiting in times of crisis is significant, very, very significant, always. The second one is that waiting is never wasted if you use the time properly. And the third is, the fruit is worth waiting for. When God interrupts our plans and puts us on hold, it's never incidental. It's never insignificant. We're not waiting because He couldn't think of something else for us to do, or because what He really wanted us to do He wasn't able to pull off, so He's just having us wait. God does not waste time. God plans things, they have purpose, and they have meaning. And the days and the energies of our lives are more important to God than they are to us. Your day is more valuable in God's eyes than it is to you. We waste a lot of time. God doesn't waste any time. And that includes your time and mine. God's purpose for our life is more significant than anything we could dream of. In fact, most of us do not dream of a lot of significant things about our lives and what's going to happen. God does. He has a great deal of significant things for us. And one of the things that He does is that He makes the crisis and the wait fit the purpose that He has. The waiting frequently is involved in some crisis that interrupts the situation. It may not be fun, it may not be quick, but it is on target. the results that he is designing to have are going to come about. Now, in Joseph's case, the time between when he was first sold into slavery and the time that he actually realized the purpose of God was at least 13 years. 13 long, toilsome years that he's waiting. All of these years are spent either in servitude as a slave or in shackles as a prisoner. Nothing that he would have planned on, nothing that he would have wanted. At first glance, however, when we see that Joseph was put in prison, it really doesn't sound too bad. Joseph's master took him and put him in prison, a place where the king's prisoners were confined. But while Joseph was there in prison, the Lord was with him, and he showed him kindness and granted him favor in the eyes of the prison warden. That doesn't sound too bad, kind of a country club setting. But in those days, there were no prisoners' rights. There were no prisoners' advocates. There were no civil appeal boards that you went before. Prison was prison. In fact, Joseph makes it a little more clear in the words that he uses. In verse 20, it speaks of him being in prison. In fact, the word that Joseph uses there is, he was in the hole. The word for prison there means around a large, round place. Okay? And in verse 15 of chapter 40, he uses the word dungeon. In other words, he was in a large pit with a roof on it. That was the prison. And the psalmist adds a little understanding and flavor to it. In Psalm 105, he says this, speaking of Joseph, they bruised his feet with shackles. So, I don't know how quickly he was raised to prominence and how much freedom he had relative to us. But they bruised his feet with shackles. His neck was put in irons. Literally, the word neck can also, that is translated neck, here can also be translated soul. The iron entered his soul until what he foretold came to pass, and until the word of the Lord proved him true. Now, most of us have not done hard time in the dungeon Hilton. But all of us, in some way or another, have suffered some kind of difficulty in situations where we didn't do anything to deserve it. Every one of us has had that kind of situation. During those long hours, when you know that you haven't done anything wrong, but you are under it, and you stay under it, and it continues to go, it's very easy to start feeling sorry for yourself, and it's easy to develop a rotten attitude. In fact, if that occurs, you will start feeling sorry for yourself, and you will develop a rotten attitude, unless you believe that there's purpose and meaning in what you're experiencing. You've got to believe that someone is in control. In most cases, when we're in the situation and it continues on and on, there's nothing on the horizon that says, look how wonderful things are going to be. The confidence that you have has to come out of trusting God and His purpose without you knowing what it is. It means you really believe that the Lord is in control and He really cares about you and has a plan and purpose. Sometimes the Lord gives us a tough time of preparation because it fits the purpose, the size of the purpose that He's going to use us in. Tough situation means great opportunity. God was preparing Joseph for a grand leadership role. Joseph was moving from being a little boy in a small family in Canaan to being the most powerful man in the most powerful nation in the world. and God is moving him along that line. If you're satisfied for God to use you just a little bit, you can do that with just a little training and preparation. If you want God to have freedom to use you as much as he would like to, and in a very significant way, the preparation and training will be extensive. It'll be quite significant. And it won't all be fun. The psalmist gives us a little insight into God's purpose with Joseph when he tells us that during Joseph's trials and in the pain, iron entered into his soul. See, the responsibilities of leadership call for some strength in character, for some strength in terms of who you are and your purposes. If you remember, during Joseph's early years, he was spoiled by his dad. He was the favorite. He got all the right positions. He got all the privileges. And being pampered has a way of bringing about softness. Now, his dad loved him, and he knew it, and he loved his dad. And one of the things Joseph learned was he learned love and he learned faithfulness. And those are two very, very important characteristics which he had. But he lacked strength and grit. He needed some iron in his soul. He needed some steel in his backbone. He needed some toughness in his mental approach to things. He needed some discipline on the inside. And the way God infuses the strength and the endurance of iron into our soul is by trial, by the tough times. For Joseph, he found this in the duties of slavery and in the dim-lit, smelly dungeon that he was in. It wasn't a great place to be, but that's where he was going to find character. The day that Joseph walked out of the dungeon, he was ready to rule. He stayed there a long time, but when he came out, he was ready. And that's exactly what happened. God put him in a place of leadership, and he had strength of character to do it. He was ready for giant responsibilities in a place that was on public display. He had already proven himself in the small tasks that were obscure. No one could see. Most of us, or at least sometimes we find ourselves wanting to have significant input in a prominent role without ever having gone through the insignificant responsibilities of faithfulness when nobody knows about it and there's no rewards coming. God is working in your life and in mine today. He's building us. He said, I have preordained that you will be conformed to the image of Christ. That's the goal. So he's in the process of building us and shaping us. Maybe putting a little iron in our soul. Because we've got to have it. God is very personal with us. He never gives up on us. But he's very individual with us in terms of how he brings us to maturity. He may be doing it in your life with very small tasks that are obscure and that don't reward you, at least not immediately. One thing I can tell you, he's right on schedule. He knows exactly what he's doing. He cares about you, and he's working personally in your life, and he's not going to quit. The other lesson that I saw in this was that waiting is never wasted if you use it well. We frequently, when we find ourselves in a difficult place, pray and ask God to somehow help us out of this situation. Usually when we pray in a difficult situation, we do not expect that God is going to answer it by giving us hard work, particularly of the non-profit variety. But in fact, there's an old saying that says, opportunity usually comes disguised as work. Well, it's true. And in Joseph's situation, God blessed him. And the way that he blessed him was, he caused the warden to recognize the character in this young man and how useful he would be in his service. And this translated out to mean that Joseph was given greater responsibility. A bigger job. Not more pay, but greater responsibility. In fact, he was placed in charge of all of the prisoners and over everything that had to do with the prison. In other words, he was given every dirty job that the warden did not want to deal with, and that was all of them. That's a real promotion, real blessing of God that he should be given such a wonderful opportunity. Now, I want you to know, for a little man to be put in that position, you take a little man and say, you are now boss. You have authority over all the people in this prison and everything that happens. The little man is going to boss others around and let them know who is an authority, who they must bow and submit to. In Joseph's case, he became their servant. You remember the Lord said, if you want to be the greatest in the kingdom, you become a servant. That's exactly what Joseph did. Joseph did that before Jesus Christ ever said that. See, God was teaching this young man something. One of the things that he was learning is, you can never be a leader if you can't be a follower. You can never be a teacher unless you are a learner. And you can never exercise authority right if you don't know what it means to be in submission. And Joseph was bound to be a leader. And that's where God was putting him. Once Joseph has settled within himself his role as a servant, then God was free to work through him and be very effective. And that's exactly what he did. Everything Joseph touched turned to success. And everyone who could observe what Joseph was doing knew that it was successful, and they knew that God was working in his life. Because God simply had freedom to do that. Now, sometimes when we are in a situation like Joseph, we don't do very well because there are powerful people around us and we're not really sure what they'll do. We tend to be afraid and intimidated by people who have position and power. What God wants us to do is to be able to serve confidently because we know that God is the one who puts people in power, and God is the one who takes power away from people. If we understand that, we don't have to worry about what goes on around us. Most of us would say, God rules everything in the universe. But when we translate that on a very personal level, what that means is that God can do anything he needs to with anybody in our lives in order to accomplish his purpose with us. In other words, there's not anybody around you, there's not anybody that you work with, there's not anybody you work for, there are not any forces in this town, in this state, in this nation that God doesn't control. All the boneheaded things, all the selfish things, all the pious things, all the unholy things that are being done in this nation right now, God is in control of. Sometimes we say, what's going to happen? What is going to happen? Nothing is going to happen that God doesn't allow. Relax. Trust Him. And God demonstrated this because suddenly Joseph found two key men walking into his office, his hole, and they were assigned to be under him, and these two key men were very powerful people in the kingdom. They were key men under Pharaoh. Now, when you talk about a cupbearer and a baker, that doesn't sound like very key roles, but remember, if you wanted to get rid of a Pharaoh, how would you do it? Well, you wouldn't challenge him to a duel. You'd have to do it in some subtle way, and one of the most effective subtle ways is to somehow poison it. The cupbearer tasted everything before the king tasted it, and the baker was involved in every piece of food that came into the house. So these were key people. These were trusted people, and in fact, the cupbearer was usually the Pharaoh's confidant. And they talked about everything. And so he was much more than simply a butler. We don't know exactly what they did to get themselves into this mess. We don't know exactly how it happened. The only thing that we know is that God wanted these two men operating under Joseph. And that's the reason they got there. Even more ironic, they were specifically placed under Joseph's authority and care by the captain of the guard. Here the captain of the guard was. That's Potiphar. That's the guy whose wife told the lie on Joseph, and that's the guy who threw Joseph into the dungeon. And now, he's sending people to be under Joseph's authority. How does that happen? Because God wanted it to. I don't know what. It's kind of intriguing just to think about what was going on in this guy's mind and his attitude toward Joseph. He had had enough time to cool off with his anger. He had had time to kind of look around and kind of think about here's a guy he could trust with everything that he owned. And he betrayed him. He had time to think about what really happened in his house that day. At any rate, God was working in his life too. And so he did exactly what the Lord wanted to. The point is that God had absolutely no problem in putting Joseph where he wanted Joseph to be and putting everybody else around Joseph in the place that he wanted them to be. God has absolutely no trouble in orchestrating what's going on in and around us. And when we understand that, it gives us tremendous confidence. Now understand, the baker and the cupbearer and Pharaoh and Potiphar all made decisions and acted according to their own desires and will. It's just God made sure that the result was exactly what he wanted. You and I have absolutely no reason to fear men or be intimidated by those in power. They have no power except that which God has granted. As Joseph waited in this situation, as the psalmist says, it was a painful situation. He was hurt. Pain has a way of turning all of our thoughts and feelings inward. I mean, the old saying is, how many things can you think of when you got a rock in your shoe? See, pain turns everything, and you don't think about anything on the outside. Everything turns in. It's normal that all of our energies and all of our resources should focus on somehow resolving the pain issue in our lives. The big problem is this. What happens when the pain issue in your life goes on and on and on and it's not short-lived? How long do you have the luxury of focusing all of your energy and all of your attention and all of your resources on yourself in order to deal with your pain problem? Most of the problems of life don't go away quickly. And so we got to face this issue. The longer we are the center of our own world, the smaller that world gets. It gets small until there's nothing left in it but me and my pain. There's no joy. There's no purpose. There's no meaning. God can't even get in it. Oh, I call on him, but my prayers bounce off the ceiling because God has no place in a world in which I am the center and all of my attention is focused on me. He won't up. So it's normal for us to focus in on pain and try to deal with it, but it's highly destructive for that to go on very long. Joseph had to learn to deal with pain in a very unhappy situation, and he learned it. One of the ways that you see Joseph learning it, we don't have a lot of information here about Joseph, but the things that are said are real significant. And one of the things he talks about is his relationships with people. It's very interesting how often when you are hurting, God will put in your path and in your situation someone else who's hurting just a little bit worse. Isn't that ironic that that should happen? What an accident. No, it's not an accident at all. It's design, it's purpose. Why would God do such a thing as that? Well, he wanted in Joseph's case for him to learn a couple of things, which I think we need to learn. And one is the healing power of compassion. Usually when we think of the healing power of compassion, we think about when we experience compassion, how healing that is. In Joseph's case, that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about the healing of power of compassion when it's going out from him. Joseph is in a hard situation, and he has these guys coming in who need his attention, and he has responsibility for them. After they had been in custody for some time, each of the two men, the cupbearer, the baker, the king of Egypt, who were being held in prison, had a dream in the same night, and each dream had a meaning. And when Joseph came to them the next morning, he saw that they were dejected. And he said, "Why are your faces so sad today?" You say, why should he ask that question? Everybody in that jail was sad. Joseph was sad, right? Joseph was getting beyond his own feelings about himself to the point where he was able to have compassion on somebody else. And he's noticing. They're not even bellyaching about it. He's noticing the look on their face. See, that's reaching out. That's caring about people. When compassion, this doesn't work for duty. When compassion causes us to reach out, we discover that we've got strength and resources that we did not know we had. If you do it just to be good, it's going to get old real quick. But if you must do it because you're compassionate, you find out you've got stuff that you didn't know. And what you're experiencing is the strength of God that He gives when you have compassion. The other thing that he found out was the exciting power of vision. And it's interesting when you put together the pieces of what's here. One of the most important aspects of helping someone is that you listen to them. If you don't listen to them, if you don't hear what's going on, if they don't think you understand and care about them, you can't help. So for Joseph to be able to help, he had to hear, he had to look, he had to see what was going on and recognize it. And it didn't take him very long to recognize that these men were not here by accident. And the reason he could see that was simply this. First of all, they were key people. The chances of two key people that close to Pharaoh on intimate terms should end up being under his authority, you know, we're one in a zillion. And he had to see. God is now putting me in a place to focus on what's going on in the palace, what's going on in the kingdom. Besides, these two guys, in a unique way, could give him an insider's view on everything and every place, every resource, every incident that was going on in the entire nation. So, he was actively involved with people who could tell him and were telling him everything that was going on. And then God was giving them dreams, which he then had to interpret, and the dreams were about the future. What all of this was doing was causing Joseph to focus not on the present, but on the future. Not what was on the inside of the prison, but what was on the outside of the prison. God was putting the pieces together where he had to change his focus. And when he did, it suddenly changed the way he's looking at things. There is nothing quite as exciting as the anticipation of what God is going to do. If you're looking at your present situation and it doesn't look good and it doesn't look like God's doing anything, and you want to get a tremendous surge of excitement, start looking beyond your situation at what God is going to do. And it's extremely stimulating. I remember one night I was lying in bed. Probably one of the most difficult times in all of my ministry, perhaps my life. And I was not going to sleep. Usually when I go to bed, I go to sleep. Lying there, and I found myself struggling with a lot of very painful issues. And I was feeling myself kind of going down. And I stopped, and I just began to pray. And as I did, I realized, I'm getting beaten to death here over something I can't do anything about. And I sat up in bed. First time I ever remember sitting up in bed in the middle of the night. I sat up in bed and I began to pray. And I said, Lord, this is really stupid. I am doing to myself something nobody else can do. I am focusing on issues that I am powerless to do anything about, and I'm letting them defeat me. And that is not your plan. I want you to show me what can be done. It was interesting. It was almost like in the darkness somebody lifted a shade looking out into the light. And I began to see and understand what God could do and what God will do. And I became very excited. I didn't feel down anymore. I wasn't focused on what was happening at the moment. I got up and I started praying and writing just the things that God could do and what God was going to do. And I began to develop a vision. I went through a lot of weeks of a lot of junk. And to tell you the truth, it didn't bother me a whole lot. Because I wasn't looking at the junk that I couldn't do anything about. I was looking at the vision of what God could do. Very powerful. Very powerful in your life to understand not just what's going on here, but what do you anticipate God doing? And most of us spend most of our time not anticipating anything that God's going to do. We simply fight with the situation, usually something we can't do anything about. And He gets us down. Luther spent time in prison, and he translated the New Testament in German. Paul spent time in prison, and he wrote four epistles. They refer to them as the prison epistles. You know why? He was in prison. He didn't waste his time worrying about prison conditions. He spent his time looking at what God could do and allowing God to use him in your life and mine. The Apostle Paul, while he was in prison, affected you and me and gave us God's Word. There's some basic assumptions that we have in Scripture that if we understand them, if we believe them, they change everything else that we deal with. One of these assumptions is that the fruit is worth the wait. All that we go through is worth it because of the fruit. You remember Paul said, the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to even be compared with the glory that's going to be revealed. There is just absolute, it is foolish to even compare the two because they're incomparable. We do not know the exact results and outcome of the labors and experiences in our life. And we don't need to. What we do know is that God will take our service, done in obedience and simplicity, and He will multiply the effects of it far beyond what we're... It may seem quite menial. It may seem quite insignificant, and no one may know it's taking place. But if God puts it in His own hand and multiplies it, the impact will be fantastic. And if you believe that, it changes the way you look at what you're doing. You remember the time that the Lord was speaking to the multitude and there were 5,000 people there and one of the disciples says, these people are really hungry. We don't know what we're going to do. And somebody searched around and said, Philip said, hey, there's a kid here with 5 loaves and 2 fishes, but hey, what can you do with that? She said, give it to me. You don't have to give him very much if it's all you got. And he multiplied. They've had 5,000 people there, and there were 12 baskets full left over. It's not the fact that you do something big. It's just the fact that you're obedient, that you have a servant's heart, and you trust God. Well, when you believe that's true, it changes everything you're doing. Joseph found tremendous joy in giving God's message to these men. Now, he could have said, you guys got dreams? You bothered about those? Forget them. I had dreams. I had big dreams. And look at where I am. You want dreams? Worry about them yourself. I don't have anything to do with dreams anymore. He could have said that. If he was still feeling sorry for himself and he wasn't looking beyond himself, that's what he would have said. But because he believed what God was doing, he had a great joy in being able to tell them, let me tell you. And by the way, the news wasn't all good. Very good for one, very bad for the other. But he had great joy in being able to speak with authority about what God said. Also, if you believe the fruit is worth the weight, it gives you tremendous security in trusting God in the process. If you know God is in charge of the result, you also know that he's in charge of the process, the steps on the way. In other words, God cannot ordain that something is going to happen without also ordaining the steps that get you there. Okay? And if you know that he's doing that, it gives you tremendous confidence in what you're doing. It gives you freedom to serve him without worrying about every little thing. Am I going to do this right? Am I going to do this right? Somebody's criticizing me for this. Somebody doesn't like this. If God has told you what is going to happen, and you're obeying him, you got tremendous freedom because you believe what God is going to do. And that's what Joseph did. Some people criticize Joseph. If you noticed, when Joseph told the cupbearer about getting free, he also said, and by the way, tell Pharaoh about this, maybe he'll get me out of this joint. And he wasn't trusting God because he was trying to do it himself. Who says? From everything I can see, Joseph was trusting the Lord all the way. So it's okay to be part of the process. You know, they got ready to flail the hide off of Paul. In fact, they were beating him, and he said, you guys regularly do this to Roman citizens? You're a Roman citizen? We didn't know that. We don't do this to Roman citizens. Oh, yes, I'm a Roman citizen. Oh, well, our greatest apologies. Later they're putting him in jail and they're gonna send him to Jerusalem, and he knows there's a hanging party there. And he says, I appeal to Rome. I'd rather go to Rome than go to Jerusalem. Is there something wrong? Is that trying to manipulate the situation? The process, God wanted him in Rome. Okay? The process of getting him in Rome involved him doing certain. You don't have to worry about making mistakes. You're gonna make plenty of them. You're going to make them whether you worry about them or not. On the other hand, God's not worried about it. He's not biting his nails. You just obey him, act faithfully, and put your shoulder to the wheel. And just relax. It's okay. You don't have to be perfect. Anyway, as long as you trust in the Lord and not in yourself, you're not trying to run things. If you're not trusting the Lord and you're trying to make things happen yourself, that's a whole different thing. The other thing is believing in God that he will produce fruit out of the waiting also protects us from disappointment. Joseph had the classic opportunity to be disappointed. I mean, after all, he told the cupbearer, Pharaoh did not remember Joseph, he forgot him. And Joseph could say, see, you do all this stuff and it doesn't get you nothing. Baloney. He could really be crushed. People are going to fail you. And our responsibility, don't take it so personally. How can somebody fail me and me not take it personally? Well, you do not want to be pessimistic. You want to encourage people. You want to trust them. You want to exhort them and so that they can do their best. But when they fail, don't be surprised. Don Anderson said, the closer our expectations are to reality, the happier we will be. The closer our expectations are to reality, the happier we'll be. The reality is that ever since Adam ate the banana, people have been sinners, and sinners are weak and selfish, and they're going to fail. So since everybody is weak and selfish and going to fail, don't take it personal. They would have done it to anybody. Joseph didn't have the market on that. The guy would have forgotten anybody. When people succeed, we want to encourage them. We want to rejoice with them. We want to build them up. When they fail, they're just going to fail. You're going to fail. I'm going to fail. We don't depend on each other. We depend on the Lord. We encourage each other. And it's also true that the man's failure was important. The man's failure meant that Joseph stayed in prison 2 more years. And that was 2 more years that God needed him to be there to get him ready to leave. If he had somehow escaped God's purpose and gotten out 2 years early, he wouldn't have been ready for the rule. But he stayed as long as God wanted him to. He went through all the rigors that God wanted to. And when he walked out, he was ready to do the job. Now, do you hate waiting? Most of us do. So we just hate waiting. Someone says, good things come to those who wait. Basically, we believe that they come quicker and better if we hurry them along. Let me give you a suggestion. If you hate waiting, don't wait. Actively use the time that God has you on hold to allow him to work in your life. In other words, waiting doesn't have to be passive. Waiting is the very active thing of trusting God and getting involved in the process of what he's doing in your life. And he will use it in a very fruitful way. So you won't be waiting at all. You're just changing directions. You're just changing pace. You're just changing what the object for the moment is. But you give yourself totally to it. Just because you can't see what he's doing doesn't mean you don't trust him. Just because you're on his schedule and not yours doesn't mean you don't trust him. And if you trust him, he is free to do everything that he wants to do in your life. And he will bring the fruit in his name.